Good morning, Connecticut, and to our friends across the sound. It's John Vocat, Director of Public Affairs for Connoisseur Media. Thanks for tuning in to the award-winning For the People, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month, so we're going to check in with a representative for the Women and Family Center to learn about the agency's programs, outreach, and services for women and children who are recovering or who are victims of sexual assault. We're going to also invite you to the agency's open house April 19th and remind listeners about how to call and get help 24 hours a day from the center. Then we're going to turn to our contact at the Social Security Administration because April is also Social Security Month. So we're going to review all the ways the Social Security Administration can help or serve you and your loved ones. And we're going to close introducing a Connecticut-based agency called the National Veterans Council for Legal Redress that is honoring and providing veterans with support in obtaining employment and medical and educational benefits, as well as meals, clothing, transportation, and housing here in Connecticut and across the nation. Their next empowerment seminar is coming up April 20th in New Haven, and we'll tell you why you should get involved if you're a veteran or if you know a veteran, especially one who's being denied services because of a bad paper discharge. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Vocat, right after this reminder. April is Call Before You Dig Month in Connecticut, so we're going to remind you about this important service with our weekly Call Before You Dig It Minute. There are about 500 or more hits on utilities in Connecticut every year, according to the Connecticut Public Utility Regulatory Authority. And as for large accidents in Connecticut history, we have to look no further than the River Restaurant explosion on December 6, 1985. The building that housed the River Restaurant in Derby exploded after the town had just installed a 24-inch sewer system in the street next to the building, which punctured a gas line. An 87-year-old gas line that was ruptured during that installation, according to a report from the National Transportation Safety Board, remains one of the valley's deadliest events. Six people were killed and others within a 10-block area had to be evacuated. Hopefully this provides insight as to why using this free service is so critical. And it's the law. If you're going to dig, you got to call 811. That's 811 anywhere in Connecticut. Well, as we mentioned in our introduction, April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and we are bringing in a brand new friend to the award-winning For the People for an agency that's been around for a long, long time. I'm talking about the Women and Families Center, serving New Haven, Meriden, and Middletown. This organization is committed to promoting equity and improving the quality of life of their clients through services that foster empowerment and independence. We're so pleased to make the acquaintance of Colleen. Do you say it safe here?
It's Safri, but Safri? That is close enough.
No, that's fine. Colleen Safri is on the line with us right now to talk a little bit about the agency and their services. They've got a couple of events coming up, an open house, and then looks like a fundraising gala. We'll tell you all about that. But in the meantime, Colleen, tell us some of the basics that we need to know about the Women and Family Center. Growing out of an agency that's been serving people all over the region since the late 1800s.
Absolutely. We have been around for a while, and thank you for having me. I would definitely like to just say that the Women and Families Center, we are one of nine member programs of the Connecticut Alliance to End Sexual Violence. We do have three offices. We have one office in New Haven. I'm out of that office. That is on Whaley Avenue. We also have another office in Meriden, which is on Colony Street, and Middletown, which is on Riverview Center. So we do have three offices. We are really wanting to talk about the sexual assault crisis services that we offer because it is such an important month. It is the month of April, Sexual Assault Awareness Month. And we've got a lot of services that are free. We want to make sure that people know that they're available. We offer free individual counseling sessions. We have advocacy and support that we can offer victims at hospitals. For instance, if a victim of a sexual assault having a rape exam, we can be there to support them. We can help support them at police stations, maybe going into a station and thinking about filing a report. We also help. There are victims that are going through the court process. Being part of a trial, we can be there to just, you know, lend a hand, be an emotional support piece. We also support parents and caregivers who have children having a forensic exam. We have a 24-hour hotline. We really, our promotion basically is to get out that we want to help people that are victims of sexual violence.
So I guess it's really important to reiterate this sort of range of wrapping services that you provide at no matter what stage of the process a victim may engage you in, preferably from that very early stage, as soon as law enforcement gets involved or they make a call to the hotline to indicate that they are or believe they've been a victim of a sexual assault. And this is, this is not our mother's, never mind our grandmother's kind of response. And it's important, I think, to reiterate that because a lot of younger people today may have heard horror stories from their parents or older friends or relatives where, even back 10, 15, 20 years ago, the situation and the way sexual assault victims or those who were expressing that they were victims to law enforcement, they weren't treated the same way as they are today, and they certainly don't have the type of integrated support that organizations like yours provide, whether it's right there in the hospital as soon as they come in for their examination, whether it's a child or an adult, in advocacy and involvement in filing reports and holding their hand through the judicial process.
Absolutely. I think certainly, with time, I think things have changed. There's a lot of services that were not once available, certainly. I think we have a long way still to go, and that's really why we want to spread the word. This is a great month to do it. Sexual Assault Awareness Month, we want to make sure we talk about this is something that is not okay. It shouldn't be minimized. There shouldn't be jokes about it. We've got to definitely, when there is a victim, we've got to, number one, believe the victim. We've got to offer all of those great support services that are out there. A friend, a family member can be an obvious important piece of that support system. Things are definitely changing, but we want to keep promoting that, that again, it's not okay, that there is help out there, and definitely direct people that way.
Very good. So, in terms of outreach, is there a difference between the way an individual who's calling you on their own behalf or calling the hotline after they have become a victim is handled versus when you get a referral from, say, a parent, a caregiver, maybe even an educator at the children's school or like a mandatory reporter where you kind of have to enter the case through the assertion of a third party?
I can definitely speak a little bit on that. One of my roles is taking part in the Yale Advocacy Center where children are coming in and they're having both maybe a forensic and a medical exam because there is suspect of possible assault. During that process, my piece is that I'm to support the family member, the caregiver. Whereas on a hotline, we might get a call from an adult. That adult can call, maybe a day after, maybe an hour, or maybe 30 years. It doesn't matter when they come to us. The important thing is they're going to get the support, and we're going to make sure of that.
Okay. So the National Campaign for Sexual Assault Awareness Month is engaging new voices. Tell us a few of the important things we need to know coming out of that initiative.
Absolutely. Well, Engaging New Voices is one of the campaigns. Basically, Engaging New Voices, the important piece of it, I believe, is that anybody can be a voice. So we can all share in this. That's how we're going to make a change. As far as engaging in voices, one of the groups that the campaign hopes to reach out to is parents. So as somebody that is part of the Yale Center, where I go in as an advocate, one of the things that the parents and I often talk about is how can we start to share with children maybe a little bit about what's not okay. Well, maybe a child needs to know that their body is their own, and if they don't want to give somebody a hug, that's okay. You know, this is about them, and they have control. So definitely engaging new voices, that would be reaching out to the parents. But again, engaging new voices, we're all a voice in this, everyone. So you can begin it by speaking up. If you see something, that campaign that they talk about already, if you see something, say something. I love it because it's the same. You know, if you're seeing something that doesn't look right, you know, maybe you're at a college party, something's not looking right to you, speak up, say something. Mm-hmm. We can definitely all be a voice.
Great. The New Haven Public Library is helping you get that message across. They've got a display going on right now at the Elm Street branch.
Absolutely. They were gracious enough to do that, and that was wonderful. And so we have a display. People can go and take a look at a notebook where they can write down thoughts that maybe they want to share with victims, maybe a word or two. Also, victims can write in a notebook, maybe share some things that help them to get through, some positive words that maybe can be shared with others.
Great. You can also engage new voices by bringing people into one of your offices on Colony Street in Meriden. You have an open house that's scheduled for April 19th from noon until 2. And this is not for expressly for individuals who may have suffered a sexual assault. This is just to kind of get to know you opportunity.
Oh, absolutely. This is to come in and see our main office, greet some of us. We'd love to meet others. We'd love to just share what we do. It's time to come in, have a snack with us. So we look forward to seeing anybody come in. April 19th, 12 to 2, is at 169 Colony Street in Meriden.
Great. We also see from your website, womenfamilies.org, which is a great place to go to learn about all kinds of news and activities, programs, and services that are offered by the Women and Families Center, that they are having an event coming up Friday, May 12th at Cascade in Hamden called In the Company of Leaders. It's the 2017 Connecticut Women in Leadership Awards, and you are welcome to get involved and participate in that. There's a full dinner being offered as well as the award ceremony. You can call 203-235-9297 and talk to their representative about that, Astrid Oyeda, who will be more than willing to sign you up for a seat or an entire table. That's In the Company of Leaders on May 12th at Cascade in Hamden and the 2017 Connecticut Women in Leadership Awards. So lots of important information, but most importantly, before we close with our guest this morning, Colleen Seffrey, is to once again remind you that if you are the victim of a sexual assault, you can call 211 info line in Connecticut from any phone, anywhere, anytime, 24 hours a day, and be connected to your local sexual assault crisis intake center, or you can call the Women and Family Center hotline. So Colleen, let's get that number again.
Oh, absolutely. And that's probably the most direct route, just to call the hotline directly. We've got a hotline, which is 1-888-999-5544. 1-800-345. And then the Spanish hotline would be 1-888-568-8332.
Very good. Colleen Seyfried, representing the Women and Families Center serving New Haven, Meriden, and Middletown. She's a counselor advocate on the front lines here 12 months a year, but especially an important advocate and contact for us here at the award-winning For the People during April Sexual Assault Awareness Month. Colleen, it was great to meet you, and lots of great information. Good luck. Don't forget, they've got an open house that's coming up at their Meriden offices at 169 Colony Street on April 19th from 12 until 2. The New Haven Library has a display to help remind you of the crisis assault number and their mission, or you could come out to their event that's coming up in May in the company of leaders. Colleen, great to meet you. Thank you so much for the work that you do, and we'll hopefully be talking to you again soon. So a couple of years ago, we had the pleasure of meeting Robert Rodriguez. He's a public affairs specialist with the Social Security Administration. And here we are, April, and April is National Social Security Month. So it's appropriate that we invited Robert back to be on the program. Mr. Rodriguez, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, John. Appreciate this opportunity.
So I guess the first thing on everybody's mind is, like, essentially when you introduce any subject these days, people may think, well, what's going on in Washington, D.C. that's going to change that? But I guess the good news on the part of Social Security is a couple of words, notably status quo.
That's correct, right. There's no changes, even though we have a new administration in place. Social Security continues to be there, you know, for the American public. It's been already there for 81 years, going strong. And obviously, if there is any sort of change, obviously the public will be notified. But right now, everything is stable and moving straight ahead.
Excellent. So the purpose of having you on during National Social Security Month, as we have in the past, is to kind of update folks that may be looking toward transitioning onto Social Security, or those who may not suspect as they're listening to us that someday soon they may need to take advantage of Social Security benefits before retirement age. So let's start with the very basics. Let's start with the Social Security number and card, the Social Security card and my number as I was growing up was really something that I was told to hold very close and personal to myself. It wasn't a number to be slapped around or shared, because it was essentially a kind of a security device. But these days, almost anywhere you go, from utilities to the phone company to retail accounts and other various banking transactions, people are always asking for the last four digits of your Social Security number. Tell the folks the most important things that they need to know about their Social Security number and their Social Security card here in 2017.
Okay, great. Good question. Well, one of the main things is we always tell the person, try to keep your information as secure as possible. One of the bigger mistakes that a lot of people make is they still continue to carry their Social Security card in their wallet. By doing that, should your wallet or your pocketbook be stolen, now a person has your Social Security number, driver's license, credit cards, and other identification that could kind of put you in a tizzy once your number gets out there and fraud starts to get committed against your Social Security number. We, you know, again, have a big focus on letting individuals know that if you do go somewhere, it's really your option as to whether or not you want to give them the number. And sometimes the last four numbers do work in a lot of situations. But I would always question, well, why do you happen to need the number? So I would tell a person one of the first things is, you know, just ask them, why do you need the number? Some places do have them established as an identifier for you, and they, you know, they work well. But always question that.
Okay. In terms of the card and the number itself, if somebody's identity becomes compromised, Is there a vehicle by which, or is it even allowed for somebody to change the Social Security number that they may have been assigned in childhood and been carrying around for 30, 40, 50 years?
Well, normally your card is your card from cradle to grave, if you will.
And the number.
And the number as well. And should your number get compromised, the only time that we would really change it, John, would be if your number is being egregiously used, and if it's being egregiously used, and at the same time it's really compromising your personal financials, if you will.
Okay, so it's not like a driver. It's not like a driver's license. If you lose it, you just go get another one, and it is a sort of cast in stone from the assignment, and they're very limited. Conditions under which a new, different number could be assigned to an individual.
Right. One of the ways in which we can change it would be if you're a victim of domestic violence, but there's a lot more that's involved to that. And actually, the Federal Trade Commission is the key player that is involved. If your number does get compromised or somebody's using it out there, they're normally the first person that you'd have to report it to.
Okay, so where does somebody go if they think, from an identity theft perspective, if somebody starts getting strange emails or correspondence or phone calls, or they have some reason to believe that their Social Security number has been taken and is actually being used criminally by an imposter?
Then again, Federal Trade Commission has the lead on this, and within the Federal Trade Commission, they have established hotlines where you do contact the credit agencies. And there also would be some communication with us as well. On our website, we do have a link that specifically will take you to the FTC website, and it kind of spells out what the steps will be should that happen to you.
Okay, very good. So when should an individual apply for a Social Security number? You say it's cradle to grave, but is at birth or within the first year of life when a parent should apply on behalf of their child for that Social Security number that will be with them for life?
Well, the good news is that part of our campaign that we have, being that it is National Social Security Month, is we're there with you throughout your lifetime. And normally from day one, when your parent does apply for a Social Security number, it's usually done through the hospital. And it's kind of like an automatic process nowadays. We call it enumeration at birth, and so we're there when a child's first born, that he or she is assigned a number, and then that number is going to follow you for the rest of your days.
Okay. So as an individual with the Social Security number transitions from adolescence into teen years and probably entering into the workforce, or somebody has been lucky enough to not have to work until maybe they're in college or even until they graduate from college, what are a few things that they need to know once they start working in terms of the role Social Security plays on their paycheck?
Okay, great. Great question. So one of the things is once your number is assigned to you, then again, a number follows you because here you are, you get your card when you're a child. When you get your first job, your card is going to be important because now you're going to start paying into the Social Security system. 98% of employers are obligated to take out that Social Security tax. As you continue to work and should something happen to you, then you've got disability benefits that you could possibly potentially fall back on. When you end up getting married, a lot of times there is a name change that has to get reported to us. As you continue working, then you're looking at retirement. And again, because you've worked and paid into the system, it's always good for a person to double-check their information. And part of the pitch that we have right now, what are called the five steps toward your financial security, is first of all, to get to know Social Security, that we do provide financial security to children and adults a lot of times before they reach retirement. We want you to take and verify your earnings. Look at what your work history is. because your benefits are calculated based using your employment records. And, you know, your employer reports your earnings of Social Security. You do have the ability to go on our website and create what's called the My Social Security account that will then allow you to check these records. At the same time, you know, we want you to start to estimate your benefits. Retirement planning starts with us. You know, we're a strong, we're a part of a strong retirement plan, and we're going to be here when you need us, but you also need to take steps, you know, to ensure that you have another other retirement income for, you know, a comfortable quality of life. And then when you do apply for benefits with us, you don't necessarily have to visit an office. There is no need to visit an office. You can apply online for retirement, disability, and Medicare. And, you know, once a person does set up this My Social Security account, John, there's a lot of other options that are coming into play based upon what the agency's been doing and just trying to, you know, bring it to bring a better product and service, you know, to the public, is that you can check your application status. You can get a benefit verification letter. You can change your phone or your address. In some cases, you can request a replacement Social Security card or replacement 1099, and you can start or change your direct deposit. Once you do establish this My Social Security account, which can be done, you know, via our website at www.socialsecurity.gov.
Very good. Robert Rodriguez is with us. He's Public Affairs Specialist for the Social Security Administration. April is National Social Security Month, and we're going to take a quick break because we've got a lot more questions to ask Mr. Rodriguez when we come back from our quick break. So stick with us, and Robert, we'll be right back. Do you love Connecticut? If you do, there are hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots causes that would love to have your support. You can learn about many of them through Love CT. Just go to our radio station website, hit the event guide tab, and click on to Love CT to help the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. And if you work or volunteer with a state nonprofit, visit the site to apply for one of our 2017 Love Connecticut Foundation grants. The deadline to apply is April 21st. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. We'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. If you're looking for information on how to plan for future long-term care costs, you're going to want to attend the next public forum, The Missing Link in Retirement Planning, Why and When to Consider Long-Term Care Insurance. This forum is going to be held on April 19th at the Waterford Public Library. This program starts at 6 p.m. and is open to the general public. No insurance sales are taking place. You'll benefit from this forum if you're between 40 and 65 years of age and have or plan to have assets of at least $75,000, excluding your car and home. To register for the program, call 800-547-3443 or visit ctpartnership.org. We're back, and we've got a friend on the line with us who has been a great resource to the award-winning For the People on a number of occasions over the past few years. His name is Robert Rodriguez. He's a public affairs specialist with the Social Security Administration. April is National Social Security Month, and we're about a little more than halfway through our conversation with Robert. So, Robert, before we went on the break, you were talking about how, you know, you kind of look at Social Security in some respects as a retirement plan. So I guess my question would be, you know, money is being a set amount of money is being taken out corresponding to how much money that you're getting paid in your job. Does the Social Security system provide a vehicle for which people could actually take out more money and utilize their Social Security account, if you will, as a kind of a forced savings for retirement so that the benefit would exceed the minimum when they were ready to tap it?
That's a great question, John. And that's the answer would be no, but because right now the way the system is set up nationally, employers are obligated to take out that Social Security tax. And that proposal that you just mentioned, that pitch about maybe asking to have some extra taken out, was something that was proposed years ago. But right now, the way the system is set up, it's basically you work, you pay your Social Security tax, we take out that certain percentage, and we start putting it towards your account, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to just benefit in the long run because it is basically an insurance. It's called Retirement Survivors and Disability Health Insurance. you know, or otherwise it's called the Federal Insurance Contributions Act.
Mm-hmm.
So unless they make a change with that right now, it pretty much would be you work and your employer has to take out that Social Security tax, and that goes towards the system benefiting you in the long run.
Okay. So then when it becomes time to start planning for retirement, tell us what the current stipulations and rules are as far as the age and the process, how long it takes, and how the portions of the pool of money that individuals have under their name is portioned out over the subsequent years.
Okay, so we look at the highest 35 years that you worked and paid into the system. So we're going to look at the highest 35 years that you worked, and overall, your retirement planning basically should be using pensions, savings, and Social Security. Social Security is only supposed to be used as a base or a foundation. It was never meant to be just a sole source of a person's sole source of income. It's really supposed to be just a foundation, if you will.
Hmm.
And it's only on average going to just give you back about 40%.
Okay.
So on our website, we do have, if you want to know what age, your retirement age, we have calculators on our website. We have a life expectancy calculator. There's a bunch of things that kind of will fit your situation. And, you know, we ask a person, you know, don't wait until you're 2 years from retiring. Now's the time to start getting up on the system, looking at what you have, and start long-range planning for what's going to come down the pike.
Okay, great. I know in my case, every year I go to my mailbox, and I think it's in January, and I get a note from the personalized form from the Social Security Administration that tells me where I stand. How could an individual use that annual reminder or use the information that they can access from socialsecurity.gov under their My Social Security umbrella to begin planning no matter where they are in their work career?
Great question. The Social Security statement that you receive, basically, we were giving that out every single year, one time a year, about 3 months before your birthday. But because it became too much of a budget burden, if you will, we dropped it. And now what's going to happen is the agency will send out a Social Security statement to you for anybody who's age 60 and over, one time a year, about 3 months before your birthday. Anyone else basically would have to go online to our website to establish the account, to then take a look at it. And it is, you know, your own personalized information. It's going to have your name, your date of birth. It's going to have the years that you worked and how much you paid in. Then it's going to tell you how much would you get for retirement at the age of 62, at your full retirement age, and age 70. How much would you get for disability should something happen to you? Because, again, John, I can tell you, with the number of years that I've worked for the agency, I've seen people become disabled in their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s,
sure,
early 60s. And then it also would give you information in terms of what your survivors would get should something to happen to you. And that's really ground zero to get that information about what you have coming down the pike to you. For you to look at it, double-check it, it's extremely easy to do. So once you visit the website, you have to establish what's called the My Social Security account. Mm. You create a username, a password. You answer a set of secret questions, information that you yourself personally should know. And once you do that, now you can take a look at it pretty much at any point in time.
And for individuals who are perhaps in a single parent household with children, if they learn that one of the biological parents of those children has unfortunately passed away, what is the process by which they can inquire about benefits for those biological children?
That happens every single day for the most part, and 9 times out of 10, either family members or even the funeral home, their directors will say, "Hey, touch base with a family member." Most people will contact Social Security because I think on the periphery they do know that would be a source of income.
Mm-hmm.
potentially, and then we would take a look at the deceased person's record, how long he or she worked, how much he or she paid into the system, and then we can take it from there in terms of, you know, this child, minor child, could potentially be eligible for a monthly benefit based on how many years the mother or the father worked and paid into the system.
And how about the widowed spouse?
And also the widowed spouse as well. The widowed spouse basically has a couple different options. Sometimes you can get benefits as a mother because you have children under your care under the age of 16. You can get better benefits as a widow starting as early as age 60. And on our website, John, we do have a link that's called BEST, which is a benefits eligibility screening tool. And again, you answer the questions, and once you submit it, it'll say to you, based upon what you told me, you should do X, you should do Y, or you should do Z.
Okay. In tragic instances where children predecease their parents, is it a reverse situation? Can parents benefit from their deceased child's Social Security?
Unfortunately not. What does happen in situations like that is the child may have not had any sort of work history.
I don't mean a child. I mean, like, if it's an adult child who passes away and they have no other dependents except for their parents.
Right, and then no benefits would be payable in that instance because the normal pecking order would be, is there a spouse or is there a child on the record?
Mm-hmm.
And we do see those situations quite often.
Sure.
Single person works, they pass away, and nothing gets paid out to anybody.
Okay. And I guess the final question for you, Robert, this morning is for individuals who cannot work for whatever reason, illness, disability, what have you, and have never paid into the Social Security system, are any types of benefits available for them in any way, shape, or form?
Yes, potentially yes. We do have another program that we administer that's called the Supplemental Security Income Program, also known as the SSI program. I would encourage anybody who is in that situation to contact us, and that's a federal needs-based program. It would look at your age, your education, your work history, what kind of things you can and cannot do. And you have to have basically a disability at any age. You could be age 65, blind or disabled at any age, but you also have to have limited income and resources.
Okay.
And I encourage a person to contact us.
Very good. Tons of good information this morning, Robert, and it's always great to talk to you because you push the button and the answer comes out. You're very well informed, and I really appreciate you and your friendship to the show. We hope you'll come back again to keep us up to date on what's going on with the Social Security Administration. Robert Rodriguez is a public information specialist with Social Security. All the information you need or you heard on the program this morning can also be accessed at socialsecurity.gov. Robert, happy National Social Security Month here in April, and we'll talk to you again. Well, folks who are regular listeners to the program know how near and dear our veterans are to the award-winning For the People. We celebrate them not just during typical U.S. holidays that kind of rally around veterans, but whenever we hear about exciting new programs that may end up being able to benefit them. And I was so excited to learn about a brand new, not a brand new group, of course, but brand new to our program, called the National Veterans Conference for Legal Redress. It's a Connecticut-based veteran service organization that's been impacting veterans' lives since the mid-1980s, and they have an activity coming up on April 20th at New Haven City Hall that veterans from all over Connecticut and their family members are going to want to hear about. So stick with us, and we'll learn all about this organization with their executive director, Gary Monk, who's on the line with us right now. Gary, great to meet you. Thanks for joining us, and thanks for the work you're doing.
Thank you for having us. We're very delighted that you gave us the opportunity to share with your audience about the work that we do for veterans.
Excellent. Bring the phone up nice and close to where you're speaking so we can hear you nice and clearly. And tell us a little bit more about yourself. I understand you're a veteran. Where did you serve?
So I served most of my time in Germany. I was in the military from 84 to 89, and I was in Zweibrück in Germany. The aircraft mechanic and went into maintenance operation. And it was a very fulfilling tour that I did. We did some important work for the government.
Mm-hmm. And your organization was originally established, then I take it, right around the time that you went into service?
You know, that's exactly true. What happened was, prior to me going into service, my brother, Connelly Monk, which is the co-founder of the organization, he came out of Vietnam with less than honorable papers. And from there, he found himself with the plight of not being able to secure a job, go to school. Really, it was a difficult time for him. So he came up with the idea to create an organization that would fulfill on helping him get his discharge upgraded. This is 45 years ago. None of the other current organizations would work with him at that time. They do now, but at that time, no one would.
Right. A lot of advancements have been made, especially over the past couple of years, in recognizing the shortcomings and the really, in my opinion, the horrible injustices that have been done to so many veterans with bad paper discharges as a result.
This is absolutely true. And believe it or not, he became the poster child for PTSD. He did, the organization along with himself and Yale Law School as a legal counsel did a class action lawsuit called Maggots versus Monk, where we were suing the government to upgrade his discharge. And it was former Secretary Chuck Hagel was in office at that time. He found out about it. He's a veteran himself, former Secretary Chuck Hagel, and he found out about the class action lawsuit. And he created what you call Chuck Hagel Memo, whereas it gives a liberal consideration for a veteran that's been determined to have PTSD to have their discharge upgraded. And then there was some other piggybacks from there. But from there, my brother was able to get his discharge upgraded, and as well as get his rightful disability. He's 100%. He has 100% disability from PTSD. So all this time, 45 years, he's been untreated.
So as a result of the class action, your brother now, after all this time, is able to access the services he not only desperately needed, but rightfully deserves.
Correct. He's now, at the age of almost 70, beginning to live a quote-unquote normal life. I mean, of course, he's still going to get treatment for PTSD, et cetera.
Very good. So leading on from that, where did you come into the picture?
So initially, he engaged myself in a conversation before I joined the military and asked me to co-found the organization with him. I was just coming out of University of Connecticut, and I gladly joined in with him because I'd seen what he was going through. It was an incredible sight. The psychological piece, the economical piece, his life was in shambles, to say the least. So I joined in with him, and after I joined in with him, it lit me up to become a service member myself. My father is a veteran of World War II. I have a sister that is veterans from Vietnam era, and another brother that's deceased that was from Vietnam era as well. Hmm. So we're from a military family.
And so during your service, the organization continued to do some work. And then, if I gather correctly, there was a little bit of a lapse in activity, which really kind of came back and started getting a lot of traction around 2013.
Correct. And I just wanted to fill in that void before we did, before we got quiet again as an organization. We actually built the Vietnam Veteran Memorial. We're directly responsible for building the Vietnam Veteran Memorial Monument on the Long Wharf that currently sits on the Long Wharf.
In New Haven.
That was my yes, in New Haven, Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
That was my brother's dream as well. So we raised over $250,000 to do so. And I proudly say this because this is something else that he gave back to the veterans. And then we he took a break, and I came back from service. And once I came back, we got together. Again, we started to back up at 2013. We've mm-hmm. been active since then.
And so one of the missions of the National Veterans Council for Legal Redress is to reach out and support not only disabled and needy veterans, but also individuals like your in-laws who are widows or potentially orphans of deceased veterans or children of deceased veterans.
Correct. We service the whole veteran family. And so the widows and the family members of the veterans, we empower them with information that they didn't know that they can get. For instance, there's some widows that can actually get benefits that, financial benefits that they were supposed to get before and they had no knowledge of it. We educate them around this. There's benefits whereas they may have burial rights, et cetera, mm-hmm. that they may not know about. And we encourage them to utilize this because this came from their husband's or their spouse, shall I say, service.
Right, right. And the other services that you provide, how about for the those disabled or financially disadvantaged war veterans?
So we're about a partnership with all the veterans organizations that are in existence. And so we will source whatever your need may be and find somewhere, some organization that supports or empowers you. So we would hook you right up with the organization and have you set straight on that. We're really big. Our philosophy is there shouldn't be a hungry, a homeless, unemployed veteran, unclothed veteran. There should not be our family member.
Right.
So that's where we come in at with that.
Very good. Folks, if you're joining us, we're about halfway through a very engaging chat with Gary Monk. He's Executive Director of the National Veterans Council for Legal Redress. This is a Connecticut-based organization that serves veterans and touches veterans across the nation, and they have got an event coming up on Thursday, the 20th of April at New Haven City Hall. We'll be talking about that in just a couple of minutes, but before we do that, we want to go back to Gary to also talk about the many veterans who are either recovering or sadly and unfortunately permanently hospitalized due to wounds or other fallout from their military service. And as a result of the great work for National Veterans Council for Legal Redress, the organization is able to even reach into hospitals and medical and rehabilitation facilities to provide activities, entertainment, and assistance to these hospitalized veterans. Particularly members of the United States Air Force. Gary, tell us a couple of stories about how you have shined some light into these veterans' lives that might not otherwise have the opportunity to access that kind of social activity, that type of patriotic activity that you folks try to connect them to.
So we are right here. Physically located by the West Haven Veterans Administration Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have easy access. As a matter of fact, I utilize that facility myself personally. And our members, a few of our members are do the same. So they have been hospitalized, and we were able to connect with them on levels that are normally not given to them by visitations. And we are able to also do things for them outside of the hospital because since they're bedridden or what have you, and they cannot go and do what they would like to do, we can possibly get things done for them, personal things as well as just get them things, items that they would like to have. And just the camaraderie, just to be there with them, just to give them some time, face time, is really, really big.
just the companionship of a peer who may have not been there shoulder to shoulder in active duty, but who share that military experience.
Yes, exactly.
Well, that's fantastic. And lastly, before we move on to your monthly meetings and the one that's coming up on April 20th, there is that national outreach. You continue to look for relationships with Vietnam veterans, not just here in Connecticut, but throughout the region and across the country.
That's correct. And it's not just Vietnam veterans. You know, at this point, there's so many veterans that are coming out with less than honorable papers. There's five different categories, but the point is anything that's less than honorable, they don't get their benefits. And so we, our organization went recently to September 13th, to be exact, September 13th, 2016, went to Capitol Hill to fight for rights for veterans. So the co-founder, Conley Monk, actually was one of the keynote speakers that spoke with maybe nine other organizations. VVA, Vietnam Veterans of America, had organized this, and we spoke and we supported this act that would give more rights to veterans or give veterans their rights, because this is actually, it's sad, but it's true. It's out of hand with how many veterans are coming out with bad papers, and so this is affecting a national level. And so what we do is if someone contacts us via our website, et cetera, and on our website, too, we'll tell you, we have a link where you can just click on and you can get some legal advice in terms of in your area where you may get your discharge upgraded. But then on this side, we would take your conversation and you know, do outreach with you.
Sure.
And set you up with legal counsel and go from there.
Fantastic. So coming up this month and every third Thursday of the month from 7 to 9 p.m., you host Veterans Empowerment Seminars this month on April 20th. It's happening at New Haven City Hall. Tell us about what goes on at those empowerment seminars, and what's your capacity to handle folks? How many come out, or how many could you help during those evenings?
Generally, we'll have a double room that could probably hold up to maybe safely 60, 70 people. I would say probably up to 55 mm-hmm. at one point. What we do is we'll have empowering speakers, what we call empowerment seminar. We'll have a speaker or speakers that would empower the veterans with information. For instance, most recently, our last meeting last month, 16th of of March, we had Senator George Logan, mm-hmm. which is the vice chair of the Veterans Committee for the state. So we had him there along with a group called VET. That's a mentoring for kids, mm-hmm. Probably aged from 8 to 24, and so they hire vets, and so that's another piece. As well as they provide psychological services,
sure.
for the veterans. And then we also had Assurance Wireless there, which gives free phones to veterans. So if you don't have a phone, you can get a free phone just by being a veteran and you qualify. It's a very simple qualification process. And so then we had Ricardo Seeley, which he is we can't thank him enough because he generally comes every month for us. And he's the guru on the information, the benefit that the veterans are looking for. So when they come to our meetings, he can give them information about how to put in a claim, how the benefits work, and any question they have, he can actually answer it. He will be one of our speakers on the 20th. As well as another one of his coworkers that work in employment. And both these young men are out of the Veterans Administration's hospital here in West Haven. So we are giving them both components, how to get enrolled in the Veterans Administration, as well as how to put in a claim and how to source different claims that are, shall I say, different benefits that people are not aware of. Very, very powerful, because people come away from there so happy they had no idea. No one ever told me. And I've been around, I talked to so many people, but no one ever gave me that information. So they're truly empowered because they take it and they do what they are told to do, and their lives are actually changed.
Fantastic. Providing veterans with support in obtaining employment, medical and educational benefits, as well as meals, clothing, transportation, and housing. The National Veterans Council for Legal Redress has been serving and supporting veterans since 1984, responsible for building the New Haven Commemorative Vietnam War Memorial. Their organization's executive director is Gary Monk. Very pleased to have you here today, Gary. Don't forget, coming up on April 20th is the next Veterans Empowerment Meeting at New Haven City Hall. We hope folks can come out to that. And if you'd like to learn more, you can go to nationalveteranscouncil.com or nvclr.org for information. Gary, great to meet you. Thank you for your service and all the service you continue to provide for veterans, not just here in Connecticut with your Connecticut-based organization, but all the veterans you also touch and empower and support across the nation. We hope you have a full house on April 20th, and if not, there are empowerment seminars that you can learn about every third Thursday of the month on their website. You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host and do not necessarily represent the views of Connoisseur Media. If you have a suggestion for a guest, an issue, or a community calendar item relevant to the audience and communities we serve, you must make a request for consideration in writing via email to me at john.voquette@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file, reflecting the full scope of our station's responsiveness to critical issues in the communities we serve, can be viewed upon request weekdays during normal business hours in the New Haven area at 440 Wheelers Farms Road in Milford, and for our Hartford stations at 869 Blue Hills Avenue in Bloomfield. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. This is John Voquette, Director of Public Affairs for Connoisseur Media. Join us again at this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. Don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab at our radio station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.